This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. It's tape 430, February 29th, 1980, and it's side two. While I'm running down this litany of deaths all around us in the news, I wonder if any of you saw the Grammy Awards this week. I love the modern pop music, country, western, and so forth, and they had a lot of it. It was really good. And I was really surprised that among the classical music awards, they nominated an album of Vladimir Horowitz and some compositions of Brahms and Bartok. But among the classical nominations this year was Stephen Sondheim's Sweeney Todd. And that thrilled me. It won many Tony Awards. It's the most magnificent play I've seen in years and years. And when it leaves Broadway as so-called light opera, it is grand opera. It's going to be part of the New York Metropolitan, not the New York Muse Opera Company, not the Metropolitan, the New York Opera Company. But Sweeney Todd was nominated. Stephen Sondheim's music is fantastic, and I played part of the Pacific Overture a little bit on some of the tapes. I haven't done Sweeney for you. But Sweeney is the demon barber of Fleet Street who cuts throats for vengeance. He's avenging what he thinks was the death of his wife and the kidnapping of his daughter by the judge. And he makes comments that the judges, the finest people, are involved in these crimes. I wrote Stephen Sondheim a letter and reminded him, in case he didn't know, of the roles of Earl Warren through his life and the scandals and so forth that preceded his great raise to fame to the Supreme Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. And in the opera, Sweeney looks at the audience when he is so filled with anger and vengeance and sings an aria song, "Don't Judge Me, There Is Murder in You. You are Sweeney Todd's too. Don't sit there and look at me." I'm just paraphrasing what he says, but it's in all of us. The potential is there in all of us. It's in the Ronald Reagans who say, "Let there be blood." It's in the George Bushes that says we shouldn't impose our morality, which was what the Vatican said to Adolf Hitler and Mussolini, and the terrible goon squads that were carrying heads of human beings on sticks around the streets. The demonstrations of violence everywhere over the continent and now over every piece of earth and planet Earth, as blood is spilling. These candidates say, bring it on, let there be blood, and let us not impose morality. That's what Sondheim was saying in Sweeney Todd, loud and clear. And so I was very happy that he was nominated in two different categories. And this was for the classical music categories. And that's where he belongs, elevated. And there's a great message in Sweeney Todd. And unfortunately, there's too much of Sweeney in a lot of people. And there's too many payoffs of looking the other way, the justices, the Supreme Court, and the judges. And that's why I mentioned the judges. In this case, the conviction was reversed in the slaying of Don Bowles. Now, these convictions were reversed again just at a time when Abscam is breaking. Abscam, or Bri-Lab, bribery and labor, began with cases in Phoenix, Arizona, where this agent was involved, and we'll be doing more of this on other tapes. And then he decided to work for the federal government and tipped them off to characters like Carlos Marcello and organized crime and the biggies around the country. But it began in Phoenix, Arizona. It was in Phoenix where Don Bowles was investigating organized crime. These two men were sentenced to death for the slaying of Bowles. He was killed in June 1976. But Dunlap and Robinson claimed that their trials were unfair, that they've got this all reversed now, that if you give a weak prosecution and you don't have a fair trial, then the Supreme Court or the upper courts can throw it out. And the defense attorneys were trying to show that they had an unfair trial. The prosecution made errors in the trial, which may be easy if the prosecution works with the syndicate. It's very easy to weakly prosecute two people that know so much about you and may have even gotten you into office in the first place. So right now, a new trial has been ordered, but Max Dunlap and James Robinson have had the cases reversed just at a time when organized crime and the FBI are going to be tangling each other. These two dogs had a reversal in those decisions. Some deaths are loud and clear and make the headlines, and some just creep like little pussy willows or little a cat paws of the morning dew. You hardly hear a thing about it. A death last week of Joseph Collinson, February 23rd, New York Times. I bring it up to you because I don't see it in the other papers. Many things that are in all my papers, I avoid putting on the tapes. If I find them in one out of 20 papers, I call your attention to them and ask you if you've seen them. Do you know the name Joseph B. Collinson? He took over from G. William Miller, Textron chairman. New York Times said Joseph Collinson inherited chairmanship of Textron and a federal investigation into the alleged corporate payoffs from G. William Miller. He died, in quotes, of an apparent heart attack last week. What would you know? Just at the time that the Congress is investigating Mr. Miller going into it, and not enough of them are pressing, but it's been suggested they get a special investigator. And here's the head of Textron, a Bell helicopter with two of his agents sitting as hostages in Iran, and cross links to the Shah of Iran and other military dictatorships and payoffs and perjury under oath. William Proxmire is pushing this point. It's important enough to bring up the presidential candidates. Why, Mr. Collinson was 65 years old. He was named chairman in March 78 by President Jimmy Carter when Mr. Miller became chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, and now he's Secretary of our Treasury. Mr. Collinson was vice president of Textron since 1959 when it grew to a $3.4 billion firm. It was $308 million up to $3.4 billion. In quotes, Joe's death is a tremendous shock to us and to those people at Textron, and said Robert B. Strauss, who replaced, S-T-R-A-E-T-Z, who replaced Collinson as chairman. Now, I think at the time that the Texas-based Bell Helicopter Division, Bell Helicopters, radio, television outlets, manufacturing terms of electronic equipment for the Shah, this corporation is suggested to be in criminal activities to go to a court that should be investigated. Our Secretary of the Treasury should resign. At this time, this man drops dead of what they say an important apparent heart attack. The man who would have known where the money passed when Mr. Miller says he didn't know where $5.4 million went quietly died last week, and I didn't see any of the paper. If you did, send me the articles. And finally, one more death before we go to Jonestown and Abscam. Mr. E.C. Jagerman died. He was formerly from the Security Exchange Commission, an aide there. Do you know that name? That also was in the New York Times. The New York Times is great for obituaries. If you want to know what's going on in Lebanon or who's being killed and their biographies later, just tear out your obituary page of the New York Times and save them for 365 days and you can write a book, okay? I mean, they're really great to pull out. Also, the Washington Post. Edward C. Jagerman won a reputation for toughness for three decades at the Security Exchange Commission. He died in New York City this week, again, apparently of a heart attack. I don't know whether they do autopsies on these people or not, and most of the mortuaries are run by the mafia. Apparently, again, from a heart attack. That means he probably didn't even have a heart disease. He was a top student at Yale and law school, and he joined the staff of the Security Exchange Commission. He was put on there by the chairman, William Douglas, who went on to be Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. And Douglas's career was also smarred with links to organized crime and Dorfman and Las Vegas connections. That was always carefully concealed, even after his death. Obituaries just had a little bit mention of William Douglas's association to organized crime. He was put on the Security Exchange Commission. Then the scandals begin. They have a little bit. Mr. Jagerman capped his government career with Texas Gulf sulfur case. He flew to Canada for an investigation that was a landmark decision. Some officers were violating the law by trading the company's shares after a mineral discovery was made and before it was made public. Shortly before he joined a brokerage firm in 1968, it was forced to dissolve when the regulatory agencies accused it of various violations. And one of its principals, Mr. Jagerman, was among those held responsible for the violations of this firm. Then he faced an action brought by the Security Exchange Commission that he had served with distinction. He fought the charges. The Security Exchange Commission case had never been resolved. That we're talking about stolen security and stolen arts now. And this new Abscam has been going for 2 years, and he was involved in a case where he was never found guilty because they never prosecute high-up white-collar criminals or graduates of Yale. that are put in the security exchange by a justice of the Supreme Court. The New York Times says the case was never resolved. He was never found guilty. And there was a trial on separate charges that was filed in the state of New York. But several Wall Street figures testified for him, including Ralph Saul, former SEC official and former president of the American Stock Exchange, now chairman of the INA Corporation, and Paul Wendells, another SEC official, a partner of Wendells, Marks, Davies, Ives, a New York law firm. So his company, the brokerage firm that he was with, was dissolved, and he was never charged. Then he was involved with other problems with the SEC. He was never found guilty. He was never going to trial. He never went to trial. Prominent people from SEC and from the stock market, the American Stock Exchange, went to bat for him. And he died from an apparent heart attack just at the time that securities and financial mishandling of very high prominent people are possibly going to be caught in a web. He died last week also. I love these apparent heart attacks. Whenever there's not a witness to a primary case, when it's some unimportant schmo, nobody's unimportant, I don't mean that, but when it's an ordinary story written up in the newspaper is not something to be investigated. They pinpoint the disease right down to the artery or the vessel and so forth. But when these people are involved in crimes that aren't prosecuted or they're about to go to prosecution or they're being investigated, they all have a disease that really should be cataloged apparent heart disease. That's a special kind of disease that never is investigated any further. Nelson Rockefeller had one of those apparent heart diseases also. Joe Holsinger, the aide to Leo Ryan, was testifying in Washington, D.C. before committees on Guyana that the CIA supported Ms. Prime Minister Forbes Burnham, that Jim Jones was in on a CIA operation that could have been smuggling arms to Jonestown. He asked whether the U.S. government was aware that Jim Jones was smuggling these weapons. And Leo Ryan's death, Joe Holsinger claimed, was allowed, that Ryan was set up for murder by the CIA because they didn't want to blow the CIA connections between Mr. Burnham and Jim Jones. Now, that's pretty heavy, because Jim Jones said, "My mind was controlled by the CIA," and then 923 people had to be murdered when Leo Ryan went down there, and 120 of his assassins are out loose at the present time. Obviously, those assassins are out to kill those people who know about the Central Intelligence Agency connections. And just 1 week after this statement, this was February 21st, Thursday, 1980, the story broke, but he was testifying this last week, Joe Holsinger and also Jackie Spears, about the CIA having documents. They had a report from the scene of the crime to the White House that Leo Ryan was murdered. Now, I saw the CIA man there. I saw it at the time and mentioned it probably going back to my tapes on Jonestown. They sat in a Jeep, two men sat in a Jeep and drove away, a congressman visiting Guyana. And members of the press and people departing were gunned down, left for dead. The large number of them, many were dead, others were wounded. And a Jeep was at the airport, and you saw photographs of Jonestown. The Jeep drove away. Now, that Jeep reported to the Central Intelligence Agency. How did I know then that that Jeep was involved with the CIA? Because in any country, if the men worked at the airport, the natural instinct would be to run up and help the people that were wounded. And when you run away from them at an airport, airfield that is privately controlled by Jim Jones and the Central Intelligence Agency, you have to go back and report to somebody, yes, they're dead. And then the orders begin, you know, back in Jonestown, begin to kill all the people. Nobody ever talked about who drove those Jeeps, who was at the airport. And I also, with my psychic eyes, could see those Jeeps, that Jeep pulled down the road from Port Katuma to the back roads, and I believe it picked up Mark Lane and Charles Gary and then got them back to Georgetown. That's how I think they got back and survived. I think they were in the custody and protection because of their shenanigans. Mark Lane had to be down there when Jim Jones and the other men fell down because he was the official biographer for all this that was going to come down, and they knew it was going to come down. He even suggested, Charles Krause, that people would be sedated in their food that day, and of course their resistance could be lower to whatever happened to them. Later reports claim and said the people weren't drugged. It's hard to tell after they're dead for 4 days and rotted and the flesh has gone off their bones what was in their bellies when they were served their lunch. I think it's impossible. They didn't even do autopsies of those people when they got them back 4 days later to see what was in their stomachs besides cyanide. But the CIA report has somebody there, and I know it was in that Jeep, and that they announced, yeah, they're dead, let's kill all the others, because it was a CIA operation. But why did they have to kill those people? Because they were mental experiments, they were zombies, robots, they were being tested, there were electrodes on the children, they were in the process of all kinds of experimentation, and if any of them came back to the United States, all of them would have to be killed because of the state of mind that they're in. 17 of them were met by a CIA agent in New York City. Others are under the control of the CIA. Now, the Mills family, we'll go into the Mills family death, but they just died days later. The story of Joe Holsinger testifying in Washington, D.C. about the CIA operation of Jim Jones, and Prime Minister Burnham was testimony in Congress this last week and put in the newspaper Thursday, February 21st, 1980, that's Thursday, and then the Mills family was killed on Tuesday, and they would be a very important part of the story of the links of the CIA Jones to CIA Burnham. Incidentally, the border of Guyana, Suriname, was overthrown with a military coup this week, and as I said last week, the 11,000 Laotians, illiterate Laotians who don't speak Spanish or English, are going to be flown down to Dutch Guyana, where they can continue the medical experiments, and as I said in the paper, it's going to be a private school, a private hospital, and they can be used for goon squads to kill other people. They're trained killers that work for the Central Intelligence Agency in Southeast Asia, and they can be programmed to be put to work through all of South America. This is a pleasant story. It's really awful. But you have these tapes, and you can play them over and over and let it sink in what I'm saying, and then compare the news the next few years and you judge whether I was right or wrong. I called Joe Holsinger, the man who had testified in Washington, who was the aide to Leo Ryan. He didn't know that Larry Layton's father was the head of biological and chemical warfare at Dugway Proving Grounds in Utah. Larry Layton's going to trial in April this year down in Georgetown. It's a year and a half. They have a very swift system of justice down there. He'll probably be such a zombie by then that it'll be difficult to put him on trial after a year and a half down there. But I talked to Holsinger and sent him a package of lists of my various tapes on Jonestown, the inserts and sheets that go with it, the articles on colonial dignitat and the medical experimentations in Chile, and told him that the links of the CIA and Burnham were so sinister that the reason Leo Ryan was killed wasn't just because he might blow the CIA connections, but because the state of condition of those people and the experimentations that they were in, that they couldn't afford to release those people or have interviews and allow them to come home. And everyone who is home lives under threat of death. Well, Al and Jeannie Mills were killed, and the early story is hit squad theory in two killings. That's in one newspaper out here. Another, of course, the San Francisco Chronicle, mystery of the slain cult critics, motives lacking. The motives aren't lacking. Jackie Spears and various people, Joe Holsinger and others, particularly families of the Jonestown people, are pressing for the investigation of the role of the State Department, the FBI that destroyed all of their papers on Jonestown, and the Central Intelligence Agency, and our relationships to Burnham down in Guyana. The motive for killing these people is very obvious if you've studied the case. Of course, the newspaper accounts don't tell you very much about it. And the story of the details of the killings, they were shot in their home. Two of them in the house, and their daughter was also shot. The son, Eddie Mills, was watching television. He said he didn't hear anything. The newspaper has said that it's possible that they used silencers. Of course, you know that Mitchell Werbel that worked with the Florida teams that were involved in the Letelier shooting, in massacres all over the world of assassination teams, who's been linked to Frank Turple, who also trains the goon squads of the National Labor Party. This Mitchell Werbel who has made silencers his expertise, who says that he manufactures them for the State Department, could very easily have made the silencer here, because when his name came up with the Frank Turpel case and we had it on the tapes, he said, I only do it with permission of the State Department. If the State Department sent Leo Ryan and the others down there and had them all killed, then the same caliber of weapons could later be identified to the possibility of the silencers, which is in the newspaper today. Another important point is that the psychiatrist Chris Hatcher, H-A-T-C-H-E-R, from Langley Porter, meets all the survivors. He works with 30 or 40 of what they call the frightened survivors. He works at Langley Porter Clinic in San Francisco, a branch of the University of California that has been named over and over again for its mind control experiments of the Central Intelligence Agency and the State Department. Whenever violence comes down, in comes Chris Hatcher from Langley Porter Institute, who works with these people. Richard Clark, who led 18 people out of the jungle on this 25-mile trek at the time all the others were killed, is asking for police protection. Why? Because he had enough savvy, like the goon squads, the 120 or that, to get his ass out of there. And he's afraid that Jim Jones' son, Stephen, will murder him. Stephen is in the Bay Area in San Francisco, and Mr. Clark has asked for protection because the conditions were, if anyone went down there, they all had to be killed. And also, everybody who set it up eventually will be murdered. And I imagine that'll also be Tim Stone and Terry Buford and the others. But right now, they have to be in control. If they knew about the setting up the banks with 14 to 16 or 20 million in Switzerland, Panama, France, and all over Trinidad and in Georgetown, if they were responsible for setting up these banks, they also can arrange the protection of these killers to wipe out those people that have any evidence of the CIA connections to Jonestown. Jackie Spears said that the Al and Jeannie Mills were wonderful people. They put their life on their on the line. They said they would be killed. They wrote their book about 6 years with God. They left the church after their daughter received 75 spankings, paddles with wood, and the father had to watch because she had dated a member, former member of the People's Temple, and they publicly whipped her. There is a lot of talk that Al and Jeannie Mills weren't the Mr. and Mrs. Innocent, that they were very much part of the people that set up People's Temple and worked with Tim Stone and set up the creation that later involved all of their murders and forced Leo Ryan to go down there, even sacrificing Tim Stone's own 6-year-old son. There's a reason to believe that that's true. One of the reasons is that there was a lawsuit that the Mills had against Jim Jones. They gave him pieces of property up in Mendocino, 2 houses. Then they gave him income property in Richmond, California, and other property. And at the time of their death, they owned a nursing home, a large piece of grounds with old people that they took care of. But there's never been any mention on how the Mills accrued all this money that they donated to Jim Jones. They gave him this property. Jim collected property from a lot of people. They later sued him. The lawsuit was dropped. Tim Stone moved in with them. Tim Stone was a DA, assistant DA on the grand jury up in Mendocino. He was assistant DA down in San Francisco. He worked close with Joe Freitas, the district attorney. And they have tentacles. He went to Stanford Law School and Stanford Research. There's a doctor from Stanford that was involved with supplying the medicine to Jonestown, the drugs and medicine. And the Mills were very close to Tim Stone, and they set up the nucleus of this experimental farm down in Guyana. And it would be similar to the money coming from Germany down to Colonia Dignidad that supports it being ciphered there. If Colonia Dignidad is opened up and exploded for what it is, then it may be that everyone in Germany involved would be killed. That's why I think that the Human Freedom Center, I believed in Berkeley, was a CIA front, and I believe the hit squads will kill anybody who talks about what went on. The Langley Porter doctors and so forth are very close to the Central Intelligence Agency. Right after the Guyana massacre, this Dr. Hatcher from the CIA, from Langley Porter, was asked by George Moscone, who was mayor of San Francisco, to look into the Jonestown story. And then, of course, there were rumors that Moscone was number one on the hit list. Mills' family was maybe number two on the hit list, and Moscone died a few days later. There's a man in the Bay Area who says that Dan White was a member of the Jonestown group and that this was an assassination killing of Moscone. So if he's working with Hatcher, who is taking the defectors and brainwashing them and controlling them so they don't talk, then the Mills were killed not because they were exposing Jim Jones, because after they set up the combustion, like an arson, this huge combustion of death, they were instrumental in forming Jones in the beginning, and that is the important part, the beginning of the formation that they and Tim Stone were very much a part of from the beginning of Jim Jones when he came home from Brazil and really began his operation with welfare people and drug addicts and former prisoners. And then the land was leased down in Guyana and people were shipped off. This entourage of the 128 white programmed assassins that are out, or the 40 or so people who are out, work with the Central Intelligence Agency, work with the military and the CIA, and they're scary as hell. For those of you who don't remember, I met Mrs. Bouquet in the Bay Area in Leo Ryan's office right after her son was murdered and Leo Ryan was dead, and Mr. Harris was there, and his wife had her throat cut, and his two daughters had their throats cut, and a stepdaughter down in Georgetown, so that they lost members of their family. But they brought with them a member of the Green Beret, the Central Intelligence Agency, the military, and they interrogated me, and it was in Joe Holsinger's office with Leo Ryan, and Holsinger was in such a state of shock. He actually walked out of the room. If he had stayed there and listened to what I was saying to those people who were really Nazi dogs working with Tim Stone and his outer entourage, he would realize who set up Jonestown. And that is the important thing, who set this up. But in the meantime, the primary witnesses are being killed, just as they were killed continuously from the time John Kennedy was killed until tomorrow and the next day and the next day. The primary witnesses will continuously be killed as investigations surface. When they're not being formed, it's okay to let them survive. As soon as committees are formed or there's recommendations to Congress, then the primary witnesses have to be killed off again. That's what I was telling the students in Santa Catalina at the same night that the Mills were being killed. I don't trust the Freedom Center. It's a group of people that I believe are linked to the assassination squads who got their ass out so fast that they're survivors, and all they do is huddle together so that they won't be killed off in case they have to go to committees. Because when people talk, just as the informers in the New Mexico jail, when you get 33 informers, you wipe them out. And these informers also will be killed if they expose anything about Jones. Now, what the Mills wrote in their book, 6 Years with God, was all the craziness of Jim Jones and the fraudulence of the place and the religion and the phony things and the whippings and the sicknesses of Jones, but not how it was formed, how they paid for property, who bought the property in Mendocino that the Mills gave to them, who bought their income property in San Francisco. You know, it's been pretty hard to make a buck the last 5 or 10 years, and these people are giving 4 parcels of property, income property, to Jim Jones and dropping suits and leaving there, not wanting their money, and Stone leaving his child and down in Guyana, not pursuing it. These are pretty treacherous things. You might ask, would Tim Stone let his own 6-year-old be murdered in that case that I was just talking about at the beginning of the tape, this Catelli case of organized crime? They told the father to go in and shoot his own son, and after the son was shot, in order to save his life, Peter's life, he said, put the gun in my hands with the fingerprints, and I'll confess that I shot Peter, and they wouldn't let him. He stood over the body saying a prayer, and they gunned him down and left him for dead. But he was willing to say he killed his own son, and he was even willing, they asked him to go in the other room and kill his own son. So when you do this with grown men, can you do it with 6-year-old boys to hide an entire government operation? You sure as hell can. They do, and they did. And that's what Sweeney Todd was saying. That's what Stephen Sondheim was saying in The Demon Barber of Fleet Street. We're not way back in those days. We're right here in 1980, and it's happening all the time. I'll do more on the Mills killing later and on that story, but I believe they were killed because Congress and Leo Ryan's aide, Joe Holsinger, and others are saying, look, you knew, you CIA worked with Jones and you worked with Burnham, and I believe the Mills family were part of that operation that set up and got Jim Jones going. They were known racists. They were described as elitists. The people in Jim Jones' organizations hated what they called niggers. They ran the place, the white people ran it, the white people escaped, and a few of them have to be killed, just as William Harvey and Sheffield Edwards or Thomas Karamessine or even J. Edgar Hoover, William Sullivan. Members of the white team get killed, the ones that organize it, finance it. If the investigation's too hot, they get killed like anybody else. Well, I did want to get back. I promised you that I do Colonial Dignitat, the Charles Crowe story. I want to correct it. It was February the 10th, 1980, not February the 11th. The time is out. I didn't think I would run short. I wanted to get to Abscam and the Colonial Dignitat assassination teams, but I'll have to leave that for next week. It's better, I think, to update some of these dates because and names because they may not mean much to you now, but they may, and they're interlocking, and they are events that are happening in front of our eyes, and they just slide through so fast that we have to catch them. And next week, hopefully, I'll do a tape going back to Colonial Dignitat, Jonestown, and Abscam, and the scandalous story. Abscam is for real. It's reaching the highest echelon of narcotics and organized crime. Save every article you can have on it. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel. We'll do more on those on next week, I promise.